Group meeting, Saturday, 17th September, 1988. We have been dealing the last few meetings with the Bhagavad Gita. And you know how in the Gita, Arjuna, the pupil, the supposed pupil, asks Krishna, the teacher, to reveal his own form. And the revelation happens to be something so terrific, in the superlative sense of that word, terrific, that Arjuna asks him finally to resume his own ordinary form as the charioteer of Arjuna. Krishna, the teacher, is the charioteer of Arjuna. The charioteer, he who drives the chariot. And the chariot has been interpreted, and I think quite rightly, yes, the chariot has been interpreted as the psychophysical vehicle, the psychophysical organism of oneself. The horses of that chariot are the senses. You see, the charioteer is, of course, in the Hindu terminology, the Atma within. Now, Krishna as the charioteer, on being asked by Arjuna to reveal his own form, his complete form as such, tells Arjuna that you cannot see this form with your eyes in the ordinary way. But I will grant you the third eye with which to see this form. Now, what is the meaning of the third eye? You know how in the parlance of ordinary everyday yoga, they say the third eye is situated there between the eyebrows. But of course there is no third eye as such. The third eye, of course, I accept responsibility for saying this. I haven't read it anywhere. The third eye means nothing other than holistic consciousness. That is the third eye. Because in that holistic consciousness, one is able to be completely in tune with infinity and eternity. That is the ordinary context of holistic consciousness. And in that state of holistic consciousness, there is a complete revelation of all manifestation as well as of the unmanifest. You might wonder, what do I mean by a revelation of the unmanifest? I put it this way. There is that element of transcendence which enters into manifestation in order that transcendence may know itself and all its possibilities. You can use the word God or Brahman instead of transcendence if you like. Now, a portion of course is a bad word, but there is no word in the language to use. A fraction, if you like, of transcendence enters into manifestation, produces manifestation, becomes manifest, in fact. And it is the means by which transcendence knows or its powers and its possibilities. So, in granting the third eye, to Arjuna, the ultimate, the supreme, call it what you like, transcendence itself, so influences Arjuna's consciousness that for that time being, he is in holistic consciousness. And what sort of a vision does Arjuna see? He sees everything. The transcendent, the wonderful, the perfect, the terrible, the good, the evil, and so forth. And of course, Arjuna gets frightened at this revelation. Personally, I don't see why he should have been frightened. Intellectually, at least, it is possible to appreciate this fact, that in holistic consciousness, everything is included. There is nothing which is rejected. That is transcendence. That is God. God is the devil, if you like, also, as well as being God. We define God in terms of good things, because that is how we like it to be. We are pleasing ourselves, refusing to face the terrible side of things. There is a terrible side. The nature of the whole of manifestation includes everything. All the opposites are included. And man has to learn how to see the inclusiveness of the transcendent manifestation. And so Arjuna says, I see in thee all the gods and the infinity of the beings of thy creation. All around I behold thy infinity, the power of thy innumerable arms, the arms of the body, and so on. And he just mentions again everything that was seen by him. Good, bad, indifferent. And then Arjuna ends up that recital by saying, but how terrible thy splendors burn. Reveal thyself to me. Who art thou in this form of terror? I adore thee, O God Supreme. Be gracious unto me. I yearn to know thee, who art from the beginning, for I understand not thy mysterious works. And Krishna answers, I am all-powerful time, which destroys all things, and I have come here to slay these men. You know, the Gita was delivered on the battlefield. The two cousins, the two groups of cousins were at war with each other. Even if thou dost not fight, all the warriors facing thee shall die. Krishna says, I am all-powerful time, and I will destroy all these things. Krishna represents the author of the Gita in holistic consciousness, the transcendent consciousness, which means that when he functions in holistic consciousness, he is functioning in terms of infinity and eternity. Time is the shadow of eternity. Time is how we, in our limited way, and we have no means of escaping that limitation in the ordinary sense. In the ordinary way, we are conscious only in terms of time, which means in terms of beginning, proceeding, ending. Birth, life, death. Uprising, flowering, and destruction. That is how we know it, you see. So, I am time that destroys all things. When the consciousness of time is wholly transcended, then, in terms of eternity, there is nothing that is born, nor progresses, nor dies. Eternity cannot really be described, but I can only say what it is not. And that is as far as I can go about it. So, even if thou dost not fight, all the warriors will die. Arise therefore, win thy glory, conquer thine enemies, and enjoy thy kingdom. But that is in terms of time only. The sons of Pandu, Arjuna was one of the sons of Pandu, and the Pandavas were really the rulers of the kingdom. They had been ousted by their cousins, the Kauravas. Krishna says, enjoy all this in terms of time. But hidden in that statement is also the fact that you too will die, you too will perish, your kingdom will disappear. And in the Mahabharata, the great poem, which is over 90,000 verses, it's 7 times the size of the Iliad and Odyssey put together. More than 7 times the size of the Iliad and Odyssey. You see? In course of time, the kingdom and everything must necessarily die. When Arjuna heard the words of Krishna, he folded his hands, trembling, and with a faltering voice and bowing in adoration, he spoke. It is right, O God, that people sing thy praises and that they are glad and rejoice in thee. Why is it rejoicing? Because that too will end, that will also perish. No rejoicing ever remains. All rejoicing has a beginning, and there is always the shadow of its ending. We go to the dance at 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, till midnight, 2 o'clock in the morning, but it finishes, it dies. The rejoicing is over. The words of Arjuna are a tremendous panegyric of Krishna, the teacher. In other words, the author of the Gita says all these things to express the different aspects of his own consciousness. In the holistic consciousness, everything is included. In the ordinary, everyday consciousness, which is dominated by the functioning of the senses and the activity of the brain. Arjuna says these words. If in careless presumption, because Arjuna knew Krishna, is supposed to have known Krishna only as his charioteer, his servant, so to say, not as the Lord of the universe. If in careless presumption or even in friendliness I said, Krishna, son of Yadu, my friend, this I did unconscious of thy greatness. And if in irreverence I was disrespectful, when alone or with others, and made a jest of thee at games or resting or at a feast, forgive me in thy mercy, O thou immeasurable. there is something which is food for contemplation, for deep contemplation. How many times do we use the word God every day? I know I'm in the habit of saying good God, every now and again. But think of that statement in the Old Testament. Do not use the name of thy God in vain. And what does vanity mean here? Not just personal conceit. It means something very, very profound. The non-recognition of transcendence embodied in oneself. And especially when people in anger or even in jest were to say, God damn. God never damns. God cannot damn. If and when oneself is in that state of holistic consciousness, the divine state, then there is no damnation anywhere, no cursing. And yet, in Isaiah chapter 45, verse 7, Isaiah puts these words in the mouth of the Lord God. I make the light and create darkness. I do good and I also create evil. I, the Lord, do all these things. Isaiah, in that state of holistic consciousness, was able to make the statement which is so inclusive. It's an inclusive statement. But in his ordinary state, he would uphold only that which pertained to the divine. And that is our task in life. Let every thought, feeling, word, and action pertain to the divine. The divine first and foremost as embodied in oneself. You can appreciate the immense difficulty. It's almost a transcendental difficulty to do this. I know from experience how difficult it is. But that is our task. Because the human race is moving towards the release of holistic consciousness in each of its members. And so Arjuna asks forgiveness from Krishna, just as in the Lord's Prayer. They say, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive them that trespass against us. Do we? And Arjuna goes on, I yearn to see thee again with thy crown and scepter and circle. Show thyself to me again in thine own four-armed form, thou of arms infinite, infinite form. So, Arjuna sees Krishna's celestial forms and the whole universe in its variety standing in the body of the God of Gods. capital G and simple G. In the body of the God of Gods. Now it's the same with us. Some person in a, perhaps in a moment of when the lightning of transcendence struck him, realized that he himself was a microcosm. And so it has remained through the ages that the individual person is regarded as a microcosm, a representative in miniature of the totality. And that totality is the manifestation of transcendence itself. So that is what we are. That is what our real potentiality, our possibility is. When a mother conceives, she holds within herself a manifestation of transcendence itself. That is why marital love and birth is such a sacred thing, because we are the trustees, the mothers particularly, are the trustees of another manifestation of transcendence. Now, I have added all this. Time lays desolate all the worlds, for time is age, decay, and death. But time is also the sowing of the seed, its germination and sprouting, its growth and fruition. Time is also the sowing of the seed. What is this seed? The seed of transcendence itself in us. And it's only in course of time that as the organism from infancy, from birth and infancy onward grows, it can sprout, it can grow, and it can come to fruition, if it will. It, in its innermost being, wills, but it is the responsibility of those in charge, the parents, then later on the teachers, the friends, the companions, to assist in this process, to know about this process. We pride ourselves in the modern world, at least in some countries, that we are an educated race. We haven't begun to be educated. Education means to educe out of the living being. What do you educe out of the living being? What is the flowering of that living being? The flowering of the transcendence which is there, hidden, unawake. And it is that unawakened state which is the source of the sorrow and misery of the world. But that we can change. People like ourselves who are interested in these things, who are really, I trust, really concerned with this sort of thing, can so live our own daily life that we exert that tremendous influence upon our whole environment. And that is all that any one person can do. One of the things that Krishna says, "Thou art dearly beloved of me." This was Krishna's plighted troth to Arjuna. Will I, Arjuna, prove my love and die into Krishna? I say and die into Krishna, because all flowering out is a dying out of the previous state into the new state. And that is what death really is, in its transcendent aspect, in its aspect as perfecter and consummator. There is the other aspect of destroyer. Destroyer not in the sense of annihilator, for the very simple reason that there is no such thing as annihilation anywhere. In actual fact, there is change. But when the change is so great that we are quite unable to see the nature of that change and understand it, therefore we say that is annihilation. That is why the great teachers said, do not fight against evil. It was a mistake on the part of their disciples who wrote their teachings to say, overcome, fight the good fight and overcome evil and all that nonsense. Nothing is destructible. Everything is transformed. It is transformation that takes place. And if we approach it, understand it, love it, and see that it is truly a divine process as a whole, then there will be no rejection of what we find painful and grievous to us. Now, through the ages, the many have constantly battled for the assertion and preservation of separate selfhood. The few, seeing selfness as the very root of evil, extirpated this root. Urged and sustained by their vision of transcendence, they too battled the epic battle sung in the Mahabharata. Strange was the composing and reciting of this poem, this allegory myth, vaster than the vast. Vaster than the vast, because as I said earlier, it's over 90,000 verses. Stranger still was the narrating of the fighting to the blind king Dhritarashtra by his charioteer. For through the favor of Veda Vyasa, he received divine vision to see the events while they were actually taking place and relate them to his sovereign. Set in the very midst of the battlefield, between two great armies, is delivered the teaching embodied in the Gita. In the fields of the soul, in deadly strife... In the field of the soul, in deadly strife, blooms the lone immortal flower of life. You are the field, and the flower is you, and you yourself are the singer of the flowering of transcendence in you.